Craig Button is
here
in studio. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Brian. I have a question for Jeff.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you watching the Mickelson Woods Friday?
Well, I do have to work. It starts at 3.
3 o'clock, yeah, so what, probably not.
We're on at 4. If it's free, we'll put it on here.
But is it exciting? Is it exciting?
How do you feel about it?
Like,
it's 20 years too late.
Oh.
But it's Phil and it's Tiger, and when Tiger's on TV, people want to watch.
Move the needle.
But it's 20 years too late.
They got to get creative. Like, I know they're going to, and they're going to do, like, get closest to the pin and, you know, put some money down on, like, a 40-foot putt. Can I hit this putt? But
I think Michael Farber put it best. He said, I think the price for the pay-per-view is $19.99, and that is, in fact, the year they should have done this.
Yeah, it is good. So, as you make that comment, what current rivalries, whether they be contests or remember when they used to have those best athlete contests, is there current athletes who we'd like to see do it right now instead of waiting 15, 20 years? Maybe that should be a question for another day.
But that seems to be the way it goes, right? Like Mayweather met Pacquiao 10 years too late.
Yeah.
And now it's Tiger versus Phil. And
I'd like to see a playoff series with Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid.
That's true.
Yeah.
Not going to happen anytime soon.
How would you handicap the chances of that happening in the next 5 years, Craig?
Low.
Yeah?
Really low.
I think Matthews might be able to pull his weight.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not worried about Austin. And, hey, it's not about Connor not pulling on the rope.
No.
It's that, like, there's a rope with not very many players that can pull it.
So what's up here, Craig?
With what?
Tell us about your reaction to Todd McClellan out, Ken Hitchcock in. How do you feel about this move in Edmonton?
Quite frankly, straightforward. I think the focus should be on the manager and on the manager's office, not on the coach. So you make a coaching change. Okay, that's what you do. And so, you know what? That's for the people above Peter Chiarelli. That's who it's for. Why are they not saying, wait a second here? We ended up, I heard all the things. We owe it to our fans. Yeah, you do owe it to your fans. And you know what? Don't tell me that your team's good enough to win. Right? And at the same time say, well, we all should be accountable for where our team is at. Wait a sec. If you think your team's good enough to win and you're making a coach, then say that.
Right. Blame the coach.
You know what? Say, hey, listen, I think this team's much better than it's performing. I think we have a coaching issue and we're going to make a change. And that doesn't mean that you can't do that. Or, you know what? It's on me. But to sit on both things, he's just sitting on the fence.
Right.
To me, he was gifted Connor McDavid.
That's right.
Gifted him.
First thing he got when he was hired, they won the lottery.
Well, he wasn't even hired.
They had won the lottery before
that. They won the lottery.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
He wasn't even hired. He was gifted. And all he's done is traded more skill for less skill.
Yep.
The team that exists today is his handiwork, and it's not very good.
If you were the general manager, is it, like, if you were going to be honest with the assessment of the team, would you kind of have to do, like, a bit of a teardown around Connor McDavid? Or are you going to keep bluffing this to say that this is a good enough lineup? What is the appropriate action?
Jeff, I think you've nailed it, right? Okay, so why don't we go back and look at Brendan Shanahan? And I think Brendan Shanahan's a really good example here. He came in, he looked at a team, right? And he said, and he spent a year watching the team and evaluating. He said, you know what? We can't get to where we want to get to. And so we moved to start to say, these are the moves we got to make. I think the same exact thing has to happen in Edmonton. Yeah, but you can't trade Taylor Hall for less skill, and you can't trade Jordan Eberle for less skill. And that's where I say you got to go above the manager. The manager's not going to fire himself. I get it. But who are the people evaluating there?
Well, I guess it starts at the top, and the owner
it does.
Has been a mess.
But that's that was, we're talking a little bit off air, but that was my... And I even said that, I think, to Ray in the 5 o'clock hour, like, you know, there's a lot of blood on people's hands here with what's going on. The manager has to own this. But all you hear, again, I can't confirm, but it's from above the manager, and you've got the boys on the bus. You've got, I don't know how much Kevin Lowe is involved.
The fact
anymore.
That Kevin Lowe is still involved,
you know, and there's
though,
guys that are
shocking.
Still kicking
ludicrous.
Around.
You've
got Gretz involved, but I think that's more of a figurehead situation. But then, you know, Nicholson was brought in, and then the owner, who, you know, he's super successful in another business, not as an owner in the NHL. I mean, I'm sure he makes a ton of money, but he should delegate and stay out of it. And all you hear is potentially he's got his fingers on stuff. So, you know, how much blood or how much guilt is it have to be delegated here?
Well, I mean, I think lots of it. And, you know, it's the same thing that you talk about Wayne. So You know, Wayne came in to coach in Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
And he was a better coach at the end of 4 years than he was when he started, right? Like he was, because he learned. He learned how to do the job. He learned where he was at and everything, right? So Bob Nicholson comes in from Hockey Canada into the NHL. He's never been part of the NHL. So he's learning on the job. But you're 4 years into the job now. So now Bob, in my view, as the chairman or the vice chairman, whatever, he's the head dog. This is where it's going to start. It's going to start right with him in evaluating how do we move forward here. We got a great player. We have a great market. We have a great new building here. So now you're 4 years in. You now have to start. I understand there was a learning curve for Bob at the NHL level. But to your point, that's where the decisions have to start to be made. He hired Peter Chiarelli. Like, I don't know how Peter Chiarelli can talk about making moves. They don't have skill in their forward group after the first three guys. What teams are giving up skilled players that can skate? Oh, yeah, defensemen that can move the puck and make a play. What teams are giving them up? Yeah. And goaltending? So, Jeff, back to your question, segueing back to you. Okay, so where do you begin?
I don't even know. I can't even imagine. I know that when Brendan Shanahan showed up here, he must have looked and said, I got a tough job ahead here, and some things have to fall in place. But I, if I took the job, I would just be looking and saying, there's a lot I got to fix. I got to make some things go away. Me and Jamie were talking. What are you going to do? I don't think Milan Lucic, he might get better. He might have a 15-goal season. He might have a 10. But he's never going to provide you value for the number.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you ultimately do with him. Do you just let him sit there and play his game out and be a role player?
I think you do one of two things, and I don't think you can do anything in between. You either buy him out and say it's over, right? Or you accept that you're paying him and he is a role player. There's no in between.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, there's no in between.
Good point.
Okay, so this idea that he's going to be a 20 goal scorer, and in fairness to Milan, and I want to be fair to Milan here real quick. He is a competitor.
Yes.
He always was a great competitor. The game now is at a stage where it's harder for him to impact the game where it's at. That's just reality, okay? I'm not going to beat up on Milan Lucic because he does. He is going to be in there to help you win. But he can't do it at the same point now. So to me, one or the other. You either say, you're no longer part of it, we buy you out, or we're going to accept you as a role player.
When you were on we're just going over like Gibby's email today of the transactions. When you were at the draft, and the Edmonton Oilers gave up a first and a second for Griffin Reinhardt. You would have been there. Were you not thinking to yourself, what's going on here? Or did you think that's a great shot in the dark?
No, not at all. There was a couple things. So number one, that was the year they won the McDavid sweepstakes.
Exactly.
So you got McDavid one. So my own view on it was that was exactly the point where they needed to draft the goaltender. And guess what? There was a goaltender available, Ilya Samsonov, who was an outstanding Russian goalie.
He was the best goalie outside the NHL.
Staring him right in the face, right at pick 16. You could talk about Barzal or Besser.
He ended up going 31st to Washington, didn't he?
No, he went 22 or 23, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what I thought. So now you get your franchise. You just get the goaltender in the system, let him grow. Just like, you know, we'll have him here in a few years when he's ready. Yeah. Well, what do they need now? Oh, a young goaltender, right?
Yeah.
And then they trade the early pick in the second round.
The 31st overall pick,
it's terrible.
Yeah.
And so why did that happen? I'll tell you why it happened. Because they go into the draft with inexperienced people that don't have the confidence to run the draft. So Bob Green, who's the director of amateur scouting, that still is, right? And that's not a knock. Bob works hard, but he was also the general manager of the Edmonton Oil Kings when Griffin Reinhardt was the captain that won the Memorial Cup. You
so
tell me how it happens.
Get my guy
bit of bias there. Yeah.
But you put Bob into a position where, you know, he's learning scouting in the NHL, but he's got a real comfort level with Griffin Reinhardt. I get it. But that's how it happens.
Well, I mean, you look at the Oilers and...
Jeff, that's exactly right.
It always comes back to McDavid because even if they have to rebuild, retool, whatever, they're still starting in a very opportune position. They've got the best player in the world.
He's
21 years old.
At what point, what kind of time frame, this guy's going to be watching the Leafs are good and other young players are good, and he's going to be saying...
Buffalo coming along.
Buffalo, and I'm doing this. Is there ever a timeline where he would say, no thanks? Like, is it 3 years from now? Is it?
Are you saying demand a trade or storm in and say everything's got to change around here? I think he's entitled to that at the end of the year. Like, they're, outside of the owner, he's the most powerful person in the organization. He can storm in and be like, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I'm not putting up with that. I know that doesn't fit the narrative.
I don't think he's that
narrative.
Kind of kid that would weep into somebody's office and say, I'm not putting up.
I understand that, but I'm saying he could if he wanted to. I know that's not conducive with the hockey culture, but in other sports, like we talk about LeBron and the power of LeBron, that's McDavid if he wants to.
It is.
McDavid could, like, if he goes to, calls up Daryl Cates and goes, lunch, 12 o'clock, Daryl Cates better be there because this guy is the most, outside of the owner, the most powerful player in the organization.
Well, I'll give you an example, and the second one is a lesser one. But we're in Minnesota, Dallas, and we have Mike Modano. And we've drafted some younger players, but our team has moved now. We're not a very good team, right? And so now you're trying to look, and you're thinking you got this great player in Mike Modano, you got some other good young players. Everybody's talking about their young players, right? But we have Mike Modano. And we got Bob Gainey as our general manager and coach, massive credibility. We're sitting there trying to think about, okay, we got to improve our team. We drafted Jerome Iginla, right? We knew that Jerome was going to be a really good player. Did we think he was going to be the Hall of Famer? No, no way we did.
Right.
But we thought we knew, and that's how we got Joe. But a big part of that was making sure that we kept the credibility of Mike Modano and those players. That's why we went and got Joe Nieuwendyk. That's why we made a push to trade for Sergei Zubov, a Stanley Cup champion. You tried to bring in some older players like the Guy Carbonos and the Craig Ludwigs, and ultimately, because you don't want to lose the credibility of your best players. So I think for the Edmonton Oilers, and when I was in Calgary just on a lesser one, that's what, as a manager, that's how I felt. That's what you got to show Jerome. That's what you got to show the best players. Listen, we're moving forward. We are. But you got to show them that.
Right.
You can't tell them that. You got to show them that. And I think that's where the Edmonton Oilers are at with Connor McDavid. It's not that he's going to just say, oh, my God, what's happening? But you better show him some tangible evidence that you're moving in the right direction and he has a chance to win because he's a competitor.
Yes.
And if you don't show him that, you're losing. You will lose credibility with him, and that's where it starts to really start to splinter.
That's where he says, "Get me the hell out of here."
That's what, yeah, potentially, right?
Craig Button in studio. The Leafs with the definition of a character win last night. They're coming back from California. All these built-in excuses. They're down 2-0 after the first, and Freddie Anderson played really, really well. Obviously. But I was looking up some stats before the show today. They are fourth in the league in goals for per game, fourth in the league in goals against.
Uh-huh.
And I think another thing that really sticks out, obviously Freddie Anderson factors in a lot to the fourth in goals against, but they are the least penalized team in the league by a substantial amount. So they're not allowing for power play opportunities for the opposition. Last night was the first time in years neither team had a power play.
Yeah.
And yes, they're not a big physical team, but they're disciplined. You know, they don't allow for their lack of size or lack of grit and pugnacity or whatever to trigger some sort of a reaction where they're looking for scrums or they feel like they need to use their stick to get back at guys. And that's Babcock. And Babcock, he's got some old school in him. He likes the size, and he's pointed to that too. But I got to say, this Leaf team right now, without Matthews, and obviously Nylander has not played a game, you look at these stats and the amount of wins that they're racking up and the way that they're playing. They're a well-oiled machine.
And it's goofy to say, but they're probably thinking, man, it's going to be a weird transition if both of those guys come back, because they're rolling right
well,
now.
They have to.
And as good as they are, everybody would welcome them back in 10 seconds, but they're going to say, we're probably going to go through a couple game stretch where there's an adjustment and other guys take nights off because they're coming back.
But it'll
and
just,
then you got a problem. Then you're thinking, what happened? We were rolling.
They can afford that though, right? Because they bank these points.
Yeah. Right.
It's the trickle down too. Like the power play may just look a little bit different, a little different.
Like a guy like Kasperi Kapanen, who's been so effective, he's going to be like, okay, Nylander, go do your thing.
Nazem gets pushed around a little bit. Like that's I believe Babcock will just have to massage a few things, massage some egos, massage some of the players who have elevated and played very well in the absence of these two players.
All kidding aside, Mike doesn't give massages.
No, you're right.
I can't see that. No, I'm joking.
Wrong verbiage, but
no,
you're
but
right.
Like, I know what you mean. He's going to have to manage
he's
it.
He's
going to
manage
it. Yeah. Yeah, you got to manage it. You got to push Kadri to the wing a little bit, give him some minutes, or get him on the power play somewhere where, if he's not going to be,
but he
that's
going to
be the interesting if both of those guys come back. Because William Nylander's probably thinking, I'll sign, but where the hell am I? What am I going to get 12 seconds a night on the power play? Because if I'm not on that unit, it's Kadri or Nylander. One of them's going to get bumped off it, depending on probably who's going or what look they want. Well, I don't know.
Did that ever happen to you, Jeff, where you know, you're an offensive player, you get some players ahead of you for different reasons?
Craig,
I
played in Carolina. We were never deep enough for that.
But how about Kadri? See, Kadri to me is the fly in the ointment. I don't use that in a negative way.
Yeah, we had an opening in the Leaf game on the panel, and they said, what's one thing you think you've learned from 20 games? And mine was, I don't think Nazem Kadri is the third-line centerman.
That's what I agree.
Look at the production. Look at his involvement. He's got skin in the game. He's agitating people. And then if you bump him down to the third line, he's just like a...
Well, and you're playing with different players.
Yes.
That's the challenge.
Like, you're not engaged as much as you should.
And I've liked that third line. I've liked Connor Brown, Lindholm, and Andreas Janssen.
They've been good.
Like, I think they've really given them... Like, so it's just interesting. I asked the question, though, and maybe you're right, you didn't have enough depth, but, you know, the fact that Nazem... You know, I call him the Nazerator now because he's an irritator, and he just... He's in it. Skin in the game. It's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
But he, to me, is the... That's where he might have to have, where Mike's greatest managing
the manipulation of the roster, basically. Yeah,
yeah, no, you're right. Because he might have to massage that. Yeah.
He's an emotional guy too. Like he did not have a fun night last night. He was flustered the whole night.
You could tell.
But he's constantly waiting to get back on the ice. Like that's gets to the bench and he's waiting to get back on.
Yeah.
Like
he loves playing. He loves competing.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I don't think he necessarily has to downgrade the players he's playing with. I think that line will stay intact. Because we're talking about two-thirds of the top line. Matthews and Nylander will step in, and they play together. I think Kapanen and Kadri and Marlowe stay together. I think that's your third line. I think Brown, Janssen, and Lindholm become your fourth line.
Well,
some sort of combination. Someone has to play on the wing. But.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be nice for the Leafs keep the top line, the Tavares line together, keep the Kadri line together, right? Keep that other line together, and now find a left winger, put Kapanen over on the left side with Matthews and
Nylander.
And Nylander.
Exactly. Or Janssen or something. Yeah.
But I like the Janssen, Lindholm, Connor Brown line.
They've been quality. You can see that they're getting more comfortable.
What would four lines like that look like?
I
agree with you, Jeff.
It's tough to compete against because you got a balanced lineup that can, in a playoff series, you talk about Sidney Crosby was on Leaf lunch. He talked about depth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We were talking about the D, how everyone's saying, the D is good enough. And we were saying yesterday, you can't go and get a Doughty. But if they can make a transaction and just acquire like a Niskanen type guy who's a secondary guy, but he's just a really good player, goes out and does really good things, can play in a second power play unit, tough to play against, moves the puck. If they could ever find that somehow, you see what happens.
Well, Jeff, you nailed it because you're not getting Doughty. It's a pipe dream, right? But like what Jim Rutherford didn't get in Trevor Daley, right? Like, I mean, that was a really, really good, shrewd move, right?
Yeah, a good veteran player, quality player.
It takes pressure off Hainsey and slot. It probably would slot, you know, that right side a lot better.
Yeah, Hainsey would move down, I would think.
Yes.
All right, Craig. Good seeing you, man.
Yeah, good to see you guys, too.
Thanks for popping in studio. This is Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst.